Hi, and welcome to the Climate Minute, your source for insight and perspective on global warming news. My name is Ted McIntyre, and this show is for the week of March 3rd, 2019. Today we're joined by our co-host, the author and educator, Ms. Mariah Tinger. How are you doing, Mariah?
I'm well. How are you?
Very well, very well. So this week, one of the continuing big issues in the climate world is the Green New Deal. I think that the Green New Deal is very important to talk about, that people understand, because it has already come under attack from people calling it socialism, it's too expensive, all these nasty attacks on it. And as climate hawks, we need to understand and be able to defend that program from attack, basically. And I guess it's important to keep in mind that right now the Green New Deal is more aspirational than anything else. What we're talking about when we say a Green New Deal is a resolution that stands in front of Congress, that it is a sense of the Congress that we ought to do something. The something that we ought to do is yet to be defined, but the something we ought to do basically should result in huge reductions in carbon emissions and correlated with a just transition into that new economy. So that's what the Green New Deal is. And I guess the point
So just to jump in on that real quickly, one other thing that the Green New Deal has done is put climate change into the news, right? It was not talked about very frequently. And I saw something recently that it was like the number of times that the Green New Deal and climate change was mentioned in February was probably almost more than it was the entire year last year.
Yeah.
You know, so it has really catapulted that into the common everyday vernacular. And it's become something that is, it used to be that climate change didn't get eyeballs, right? It didn't get clicks. And I think the Green New Deal has changed that.
You're absolutely right. It has been a sea change. And in fact, the much maligned Chuck Todd of Meet the Press, he had people back on talking about the Green New Deal this past Sunday. So you're right. The Sunday shows have picked up on this. There's more coverage. That's a great thing. But that higher profile brings out the machine guns on the other side. And one of the things I wanted to, in particular, get our collective arms around is something that, I want to talk about the a price estimate that someone has put out, but I want to use the George Lakoff. You heard of George Lakoff, Mariah? I'm sure you have. He's the guy who talks about framing issues so that you define the vocabulary. You don't give the vocabulary away to the other side. You define the terms. And what George Lakoff talks about is a truth sandwich when you're dealing with some sort of lie. That is to say, you say the truth first, and then you say what the lie was, and then you repeat the truth. Because if you lead with the lie, that's what people remember, right? You can't unring that bell once you've said the distorted thing. So you have to set the frame by talking about what the reality is. And the reality is that there is currently no legislation that has any sort of dollars associated with it for the Green New Deal. The Green New Deal is aspirational. It has big ideas in it, but it should be considered an investment in the sense that monies would be put against certain programs that would pay off in and of themselves and avoid other kinds of losses downstream. But the fact is, there is nothing yet that has a budget associated with the Green New Deal. Okay, so let's just say that. So then comes the lie. There is a report, and you will probably hear this number as a climate hawk. You'll probably hear this number. It's come out of some oil-supported think tank somewhere, that the Green New Deal will cost $93 trillion over the next 10 years. And of course, when you look in the report says, oh, it's somewhere between $51 and $93 trillion over 10 years. So that's a factor of two uncertainty already, but we're only quoting the high-end number in the news media, right? So that's the lie, that there is anything approaching a legitimate, credible, honest estimate of how much money we have to put into the Green New Deal. That cannot exist now because there is no Green New Deal to have a budget associated with. But I think a further distortion that is in this estimate that of you know, the scary scare quotes cost of the Green New Deal is that it does not take into account the benefits of that investment. Right? It doesn't talk about the avoided damage from storms and all the kinds of things that the benefits we'll reap by investing that money. And that's another one of the distortions in this topic, is that they keep talking about a cost when in fact the Green New Deal concept, it would be an investment. It would be putting money in the expectations that that would make the society, make everyone better and have a payoff in the future. So there are very important ideas around this that are all sort of conflated in this number that you're going to hear about how expensive the Green New Deal is. So I just kind of want to put that on, and I'll say again that the truth of the matter is that there is no such thing to which anyone can attach a budget, because there is nothing in the Green New Deal that has that kind of content that you can budget yet. And so the number that you hear should be disputed. This $93 trillion should be disputed when we hear it. I'm going to take a deep breath.
Well, so, yeah, I mean, I was at this great talk, which we can talk about later, but I was at this great talk last night in WBUR's new city space. And one of the presenters that was there on the panel was talking a little bit about her name was Rachel Cletus. She's the policy director of climate and energy at the Union for Concerned Scientists. Mm-hmm. And she was talking about how in 2018 alone, there was an estimated nearly $100 billion in damages from extreme weather. And she didn't mention this, but there was natural disasters killed at least 247 people last year, right? So, and that's 1 year, right? And if you look at that, not that we need to, as you said, you know, the number that you gave us, mm-hmm. before, which I won't repeat, so we're not reemphasizing this untruth. But you know, if you look at it from the perspective of what are we avoiding, what costs are we avoiding, mm-hmm. and to some degree, you know, 247 lives lost due to extreme weather. Like, I mean, if you wanted to monetize that,
right.
You know, it's far beyond. Yeah, it's far beyond what anything we would invest in. So you know, that's kind of the first part of my answer, is that obviously, which we all know, investing in these kinds in climate action has much bigger benefit than the actual investment.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, mm-hmm. because of the externalities and the cost of public health and all these things that we'll address if we address climate change. But then beyond that, you know, if you think too about when we first started talking about climate action, the first sort of line of attack was, well, it's going to hurt the economy if we address climate change. And it's quite the contrary. But that, you know, the sort of climate denier panel of folks out there knows that if they attack the economy, that's going to catch people's attention, right. And immediately make people not interested in it. If it sounds like it's going to hit everyone's wallet, it becomes a hot, you know, like a hot potato. Oh, yeah. Nobody wants to touch it. And so this seems to be right in line with that. Let's make it sound like it costs a whole bunch of money so that nobody wants it, even though in the long run, we know that it actually, I actually read somewhere that the cost of addressing climate change will save us money versus the business as usual.
Right.
It's marginal, but it'll save us money over the long run without taking into account the externalities.
Or the ethical burden to do the right thing. I mean,
yeah.
You say there's $100 billion a year, but that $100 billion a year of known loss will continue for the next two centuries, right? The actions we take now will have repercussions that go on for years and years. So whatever price tag you want to put on what we do now, that cost at some level should be amortized against the next 100 years, right? Because that's when the damage will be rolling in. So I think that, I think, again, I think that we have to be careful about the vocabulary that's thrown at us, right? So cost is not the right word. We need to talk about investments. I mean, and the other big ticket item here, when we begin to encounter the pushback because the Green New Deal has hit the, shall we say, the has gone viral, as the kids say these days, right? Everyone's talking about the Green New Deal. The other thing that people, the other stone that is thrown at the Green New Deal is that it is, scare quotes, socialism, right? That's the other thing. And there was a report that came out over the weekend saying that, you know, the word socialism and socialists polls rather poorly amongst the vast, great, unwashed American people, right? So no one wants to be a socialist, even though they don't really know what that means. They don't want to be it, right? Just the way everyone accused Obama of being a socialist without knowing what it meant. But I think that, and that's a battle we don't have to fight. We don't have to talk about the Green New Deal is a socialist program, because it's not. I mean, it's no more socialist than World War II was, right? But we need to speak about the Green New Deal in terms of positive investments and transformation and jobs and just a sustainable future, not as some implementation of a socialist design that was cooked up in Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez's back office at the in the Capitol, right? We don't need to sort of play into the hands of the bad guys by saying, oh yeah, this is socialism, because socialism is such a nebulous term, right? I mean, you probably know more about what socialism is than I do, right? But I mean,
are you calling me a socialist?
No. I mean, you probably have studied it. I mean, you've. I mean, it just seems like it's a word to avoid.
Yeah, you know, it's also the word that gets played every time. I think we've talked before about how Social Security and Medicare, all of these things were originally branded as socialist efforts, right? I'll tell you the word that I would not want it associated with my political career. That would be either climate denier or climate delayer, right? That's the new AOC.
Tell me, really.
Yeah, good old Alex. Good old. She's not old. She's young. But Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez has been calling people out for being climate delayers. Folks who are unwilling to act in the ways that need to happen to address climate change. And you know, this is within the Democratic Party, and we've talked a lot about the importance of being unified, and I absolutely agree with that. But, you know, I can tell you that in 20 years, if I were to look back on my political career and I spent any time doing anything that would get me labeled as a climate denier or a climate delayer, that's going to be a bigger mark on your resume, smudge on your resume than being a socialist. That's what I think.
Isn't there some quote from someone, I don't know if it's Dante, but you know, the special place in hell reserved for people who, you know, don't get into the fight, right? They see this thing happening and they drift along. I think the argument is that if you're not actively trying to solve the climate problem, you're basically participating in the delay, right? You're part of the inertia and you become part of the delayer, climate delayer crowd. So I agree. I mean, I think you're right. It's an epithet. I mean, we don't need, you know, don't want to get pulled into the epithet game like other people, but it is an apt description of people who aren't bought in, right?
Right.
Is that so? But then you say, okay, is that polarizing, right? Do we really want to, you know, have us shoot each other in the foot over this, you know? I mean, it's a tough world. I mean, it's a tough world going forward, because you need to stay united, but at the same time, you can't be accepting complacency, right? How do you mix those two things and be urgent without yelling at the people who aren't, say, keeping up? I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely one of those. A long time ago, I sort of feel that we were at the point where it was just about getting people to sort of accept the science, and now we're at the point where it's like, what do we do about the science? And that's a much harder discussion than just accepting the science, because that discussion's easy, right? We know the science is real. We know it exists. Yeah. I mean, I shouldn't say it's easy, because it's been going on for a long time, but it's definitely hard science from that perspective, but it's very robust. Mm-hmm. And the denial of it is not proper, and it's set us back, certainly, you know. But now we're definitely at the point where it is harder trying to figure out how to address this how to move forward on it
because everyone's got some
challenge.
Skin in the game now, right?
Yeah.
If you once you start talking about jobs and money, people think they're involved, and often they are. I mean, the question I think for Climate Hawks is to point out the opportunity and advantage that something like the Green New Deal offers, right? And a quote, I know at least one quote from every famous philosopher, but that's about the depth of my knowledge. But isn't it Michelangelo talked about how, you know, the people, you know, that in bringing into being a new order of things, the people who know what they're going to lose know what they're going to lose, and they're going to fight like crazy. It's the people who don't know what they're going to gain, where it's much more amorphous. They don't know how to get in the fight because they don't know that they're the advantage of that they could gain. So I think we need to be clear to people that the Green New Deal offers great advantages to the vast majority of Americans, and only the people who are going to get stuck is the oil companies, not Americans.
Yeah.
Thus spoke Zarathustra.
I'm impressed that you know one quote from. that's something to keep in your pocket.
I just keep Googling every day. Anyway, Mariah, we should put it down there. So, folks, if you're listening, the Green New Deal is important. We need to stay on top of it, paying attention to what's going on, because this is the project that's at the scope and scale of what we need.
and I'll just jump
did
in.
You want, yeah, did you want to talk to?
Yeah, I'll just give a plug for this stepping up business in the era of climate change talk that I went to. It's a five-part series, WBUR series, in collaboration with Harvard Business School and Boston University's Questrom School of Business. So, you know, shameless self-promotion, because that's where I do teach. But it's a great series, and it features leading thinkers from business, environmental advocacy groups, and universities, and the main thrust of the series is to explore what businesses are doing, can do, and should do to confront climate change. But then it meets basically on the first, or it will convene on the first Tuesday of each month, and the tickets are very reasonable. I think they're like $15 or something like that. And the next one will be on April 2nd at 6:30 p.m. At the WBOR City Space, and it's about food, diet, and climate. So we'll be looking at, they will be looking at, have some speakers who can talk to a little bit more of how we should address the food and the diet piece of climate change. So really interesting series of talks. I definitely recommend it. I was not. It's a beautiful space.
Where is it? BU. I'm familiar with BU myself.
Yeah, so it's a new space. It's this it's called the City Space, and it's at 890 Commonwealth Ave. It's this great. It's this stage, and it has this amazing sort of light wall where, you know, it's just really a striking venue.
I used to ever work right near the 700 towers, and so 890 must be farther out near
it's a little bit further up.
Right. Oh, cool. Interesting. Yep. And a new space, so, and beautiful, huh?
Yeah, oh, it's absolutely beautiful. Yeah, it was a really wonderful venue to see. So, well, we could put a link up to the series on our website.
The next one's in April. Maybe if you're lucky, you can go to the
April
Red Sox,
2nd.
The Red Sox game in the afternoon, and then go and see a climate talk at night. Right?
I think it's before. Isn't April like 8th or something?
Yeah,
opening day
I think is the 8th, but maybe the one in May you can go to. Anyway, let me put in a plug for the following thing. If you're a climate hawk, a climate activist, and you have a story to tell, my advice is to get out your cell phone, turn on the voice memo function, and for 3 minutes describe what it is you're doing. And then take that voicemail and forward it to podcast@massclimateaction.net. And we'll take a look at it. We'd love to hear stories from people that are actually doing things out there in the real world. So whether you're Massachusetts or not, anywhere you are, if you're working on a climate issue, record a voice memo on your smartphone and send it to us. It's podcast@massclimateaction.net. And if you just want to send us an email suggesting new topics or complaining about our insult to philosophy, you can send us an email at that same address. The other thing I want to mention is that I don't have the date in front of me, but in late April, the annual Toxic Action Conference, which is co-hosted by by Massachusetts Climate Action Network will be happening out in Worcester in late April. We'll get the exact dates, but so mark the second half of your second half of the month of April to go to this conference, because you'll enjoy it. There's a lot. We'll have more details later, but it's a very interesting exercise. So let me tell you finally that you can check out the links to most of what we talked about at the blog. It's at massclimateaction.org/blog. You can find us on Facebook at /massclimateaction. You can listen to us directly on your smartphone using almost any podcast application. Or as I heard someone say, wherever you find your podcasts, there we will be. And of course, we're on Apple Podcasts. You can find us by searching for Massachusetts Climate Action. We'll close where we always close, by saying that because we recognize the necessity of personal accountability, because we accept responsibility for building a durable future, because we believe it's our patriotic duty as citizens to speak out, we must insist that the United States transform its energy sector over the next decade under a just and equitable plan, using regulation, investment, and a price on carbon to safeguard our collective future. So, Mariah, thank you so much for being here.
Thanks for having me.
Thanks for everyone for listening. We'll talk again soon. Bye-bye.
Very cool.